Welcome to the Full Frontal Living Podcast. I'm Lisa Carpenter, master life coach to driven, ambitious humans who want more out of life without having to sacrifice themselves to achieve it. I'll share how it's possible to slow down, take better care of yourself, find more peace and ease, create sustainable energy, stop procrastination and overwhelm, and fall in love with your life, your business, and your body. This podcast is for you if you're ready to learn what it takes to thrive as a high performer, do less but achieve more, make you and your well-being a top priority, and create your extraordinary life. I'm so glad you're here. Hey, hey, listeners. Thanks for joining me on another episode of the Full Frontal Living Podcast. And today, I have a new friend on. His name is Kelly Gardner, and he is the partner of somebody who I've had on the podcast a few times now, Emily Goff. And what you don't know, Kelly, is that you are the first person I have ever brought onto my podcast that I have not gotten to know ahead of time, because I'm so careful about who I share with my audience. I have a very loyal audience who tune into everything that I do. So I've always been really, really discerning about who I share. But the more I talked to Emily about you, and the more that I looked at your stuff, I'm like, oh, I want to know him better. Because if Emily loves him this much, he's going to be somebody that I want to know. And as I mentioned before I hit record, I don't think there's enough voices in the space that really support men and men's personal development. And I know you're working with couples, and we're going to dive into that. But I really love your perspective on things as I read through your work. So before we dive in anymore, I would love for you to introduce yourself to my audience and let them know who you are and how you're helping people in the world.
Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for having me here. It's really an honor to hear that I've been invited under that lack of awareness at this point in terms of us knowing each other. And I think that's also a testament to what an amazing partner I have, that her faith in me alone is enough to spark an interest. So thank you, first of all, for having me on. So my name is Kelly Gardner, and I have been in the personal development space for over 25 years. I got started really early on, at 18 years old, working in communities, doing improvisational theater, where we would bring a heightened conflict to a conflict to a heightened moment, and then allow the people that were witnessing that, the communities that we were performing for, to step in and play out the experiences of their lives and how they would like to see it happen. So it was really early drama therapy that I discovered my love of people, of communication, of how we can use communication to bring us closer and to cut across huge divides in society and culture. Being from a multi-ethnic background, it has always been a passion of mine to find, how do we bring people together? And after a deep dive into compassionate communication, which is a lot of my background, as well as finally working with men's groups and working in those spaces, it really all came back to what really moves me. My biggest goal in life is to create a system that supports the individual development of every human being on this planet, to bring forth their individual gifts and goals. And so I say I work primarily with men, but ultimately I'm working with families, with communities. How do we support the foundation, the building of a solid foundation within those most primary relationships, our intimate relationships, our romantic relationships, to build foundations for positive family dynamics, for children to grow up in places where they're respected, they're nurtured, they're given the opportunity to grow into the fullest expression of who they are. And so that's really who I am and what I do in this world, is how can I find a way to support the expression, the full expression of humanity in each and every human being. And currently that's in relationship.
That's a big mission. I love it. But, you know, how we relate to ourselves, how we relate to other people, how we relate to our partner in a relationship has tremendous impact on our children and who they grow up to be and the behaviors that they get into and the patterns they either repeat or they don't repeat. We can literally like stop generational patterns if we can show up and communicate differently. I'd love for you to share with me what compassionate communication means. Because I don't know about you, but I work with a lot of people, and I had to learn this myself. Compassion is something that they can give to others, but they often struggle with it for themselves. So I'd love for you to define compassionate communication.
Beautiful. Well, I'll first say that it comes out of the nonviolent communication movement from Marshall Rosenberg. That's where I originally learned this work. I use the word compassionate because I feel it aligns more than nonviolent. I like to look at what we're leaning into rather than what we're leaning away from. But what it really means to in compassionate communication and my usage of it is to understand the judgments that I am carrying and how I am placing those judgments on other people consciously or subconsciously in my communication. And so really it comes down to owning my shit and acknowledging where I'm putting my shit on other people, either consciously or most often unconsciously, and how that shit causes people to bring up their barriers and defend themselves or fight back and creates the continuance of a separation, bringing us, drawing us further and further apart. And so compassionate communication is finding ways to connect to what is really alive in me. What is my true feeling, not my thought that is creating a whole set of feelings, but what's the feeling that's alive in me? How can I present that in a way that allows people to honor that and honor me and create a path to getting my needs met rather than forcing me further and further away from the needs that I'm seeking to get met in the communication.
I love that. What I'm really hearing is it's about being radically responsible for how you're communicating and what you're putting out there, right? Instead of being reactive, really taking a step back and saying, what's really going on for me here? And how can I communicate that in a more personally responsible way? Because so many of us communicate by, like, I call it emotional vomiting on our partners or friends or whatever, expecting them to kind of clean up the mess. We walk away feeling better, they end up feeling slimed, and we just move further apart instead of coming together. And I think many of us work have, I don't anymore, but I know many people listening have worked from that place of believing that other people are responsible for making them feel better instead of being responsible for how they're communicating and being clear on what it is they want and they need.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it reminds me of the victim, villain, savior triangle, right? You know, it's how am I creating the context for you to come and save me or you to be the villain in my story so that I can be the victim and be and find that dynamic. And so oftentimes that's what I'm hearing is being presented in my communication, not because I want to, but because I've been raised in a society that taught me to speak this way.
That's
Like,
right.
let's be really honest. Like, this is how we have been socialized to communicate from a very young age to, you know, to defend myself. So much of my communication is based on personal defense, and that defense becomes rejected in other people, and then we get further and further apart. And so, and what does it look like to actually open up myself in a vulnerable way that I can allow people in to support me, where you're not my savior, you're not the villain in the story. You're just another human being on your path who can choose, and the most important piece is the choice, who can choose to be here with me in what I'm going through or choose not to. And that's your choice. And if you choose to show up for it, show up for it. And if you choose not to, that's okay.
That's okay. What do you think people gain out of running that victim story? Because so many people do, and they often don't even recognize that they're running the victim story. And I don't believe we do anything without a gain, without a benefit to
Absolutely.
us, which people say, well, there's no benefit to me, right? Everybody throws their hands up in the air. There's no benefit here, which is also part of being a victim. But what do you find is the thing that most people benefit from staying in that victim story?
It's such a great perspective. Thank you for putting that in there. I agree. I don't think anybody does anything if it doesn't give them something positive. So what am I getting from being the victim? Right. So one piece, it's there's a moral empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I get to be right. when I'm the victim. I get to be in the right. And because I've been wronged, I'm owed something. The world owes me something. I've been wronged. I'm owed something for it. So there is, in a very strange way, there is an actual empowerment that I experience from being, from presenting this as a victimhood. And I want to be really clear. There are plenty of people who are experiencing actual victimhood. I'm the victim of an assault, a victim of a whole lot of other things. But that's just one very, the incident that happened to me is not, does not cause me to respond in a way that this story is now the predominant story that's running my life. I can have things happen to me, but is, am I positioning myself in a story where someone else is to blame? Therefore, someone else has to take responsibility, which takes the responsibility off of me to own my shit.
Yeah, I agree. I think many people also get stuck in that place of being a victim because it gives them that attention and love and belonging that so many of us are seeking, right? Because we've been taught, like, if you're the victim, you're going to get love. And, you know, I found myself getting caught in these patterns a few years ago. And I was like, wow, what is going on here, Lisa? Like, why are you going back to this? And it was that part of me that really was wanting somebody to just say, you're going to be okay. I've got you. I see you, right? Like, wanting that love and support, not even realizing that that isn't somebody else's responsibility to give to me. And we can get that love and attention and belonging without playing that victim card all the time. Because ultimately, that's the thing that creates so much more separation in relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. You landed it so well there, you know, and that, and going back to it gives me something, right? And it has worked in my past. It has definitely worked somewhere along the line, whether it was my parents or my first boyfriend or whatever it was, it worked somewhere. So I keep going to the well, trying to get this thing that gave me, you know, I make a distinction between the strategies to get my needs met and the needs that I have, right? And so many of us are living life at the level of the strategy that has worked for me in the past to get my needs met. That victim strategy has worked at some point to help me get my needs met, or I wouldn't do it. But the crazy thing about it is the same thing that has been working for me in my life is the very same thing that is holding me back from the life that I say that I want.
Correct. So good. So if any, and we're going to go into a different topic, but I just kind of want to like wrap this up with a bow because I think it's so good. Most victims, most people who are playing that victim card, ironically don't realize that they are being a victim in their own life. It's a hard pill to swallow when you kind of wake up to that. I've had my moments. I'm sure you've had yours because you've been in self-development for a long time. It's a real gut punch. What do you think the red flags people need to look for in their own lives that might make them go, wow, I am totally being a victim here? What would that look like if you were defining it to somebody?
You know, the first thing that pops in my mind, and I'm just thinking about, you know, people or clients that I've experienced this with recently is when there is no win. When I've positioned the story of my life as there is no win. If I do this, I'm going to lose. If I do this, I'm going to lose. There's no way that I can possibly win. When I hear that story going on, there's something in there that is, it's important that I don't have a way out. And I've positioned this. It's important for me that I've positioned this, that I don't have a way out. And that's usually one of the first things that I notice in the communication, is starting with, yeah, there's no way that I can win this one.
That's a good one. I find it shows up a lot in resentments. People are into resentments, right? That pointing the finger at somebody else. If you're pointing it at somebody else and hoping that they'll change so you can feel better, I often look at that as like, okay, we need to look at the story going on here. Which,
Absolutely.
you know, which then brings us to, I was on your Instagram feed, which I mentioned before we went live, and there was a post that you had made about how do you know whether to stay or whether to go in a relationship? And to be able to make that choice, not from a victim-y standpoint, but from an empowered, like, what actually is the best thing here for the people in the relationship? And there was a beautiful sentence that you wrote on this post around making this decision, but it said to go out the same way you came in. And I'd love for you to go into what that means. And I'd just love to hear it from your mouth versus me reading your post. And then we'll kind of dive in from there. Because I know you've had a few relationships in your past, as have I. Children to prove it. And
Great, great growth.
we're always in transition and we're always growing and changing. So how do we go out the same way we came in, or how do we stay in?
That's a thank you for that question. You know, when I put up that post, I was really reflecting a lot on the core negative images that we that I create in reference to my partner. And when I started out my relationship, I really didn't have a core negative image. I had a belief. I had a belief that this person was going to be everything that I wanted them to be. And in that space that I walked, that I came into this relationship, they were infinite possibility. They could be anything. And I believed in their the opportunity for them to be exactly who it was that I wanted, right? But then the relationship starts and I go, well, you know, they kind of are a little bit lazy, you know? And it's not necessarily that they are lazy, they just didn't take out the trash, right? And so I noticed that and I pointed out, oh, that person didn't take out the trash. And then after a couple of weeks, I noticed they rarely take out the trash. And that rarely takes out the trash turns in, you know what? They're kind of slovenly. And so one piece builds upon the next piece, which creates an image of who this person is. And once I've created this image of who this person is, they're trapped in that image. Everything that they're going to do from here on is only going to further reinforce that story that I've created. I'm the one who created that. Yes, sure, there was some evidence that supported that. But if I go back to the beginning of my relationship, there was no evidence that supported that they were amazing, but I believed it. So my request to people is, can I let go of these core negative images that I am so certain that this person is? I'm so certain that this is who they are. Can I begin to let that fall to the side and start to see them in the same way that I came into this relationship, giving them the opportunity to rise up to the person that I'm wanting to be with. But if
Right.
I don't give them the opportunity to do so, then how can I ever really expect them to be that? And so my offering is that if I want to know that I gave the very best that I could, can I give them an opportunity, just an opportunity to live into who they say they want to be? And if they can't be there, it's okay. We'll go our separate ways on our own time. I'll set my time for how long I can be in that space of giving you the opportunity to be who you say you want to be. But if as long as I'm willing to give that opportunity that I started with, then I'll know that when I walked away, I gave it everything that I had.
You bring up a few really good points. You know, we are constantly seeking proof, evidence of our beliefs and our stories, right? So if you believe your partner is a slob, you're going to constantly see evidence of that to build your story. You know, it's literally called case building, and people do it in their relationships so they can have all this evidence, go back into their victim story and say, "See everything, you proved it to me." But the flip side was even coming into the relationship is so many people come into relationships with this expectation of somebody. They put this expectation on the other person, but they never actually communicate that to the other person. So you're living your Disney princess story about how you think things are going to be, and the other person has no idea that these expectations are on them. So right out of the gate, you're already losing because you haven't even communicated what you want, what you need, what your expectations are. And then there's a whole other rabbit hole about how unhealthy is it to get in a relationship based on the potential of a person, which I have history of. I'm sure you too. We all do. So I'd love for you to elaborate a little bit more on those.
Yeah, so the flip side of that, which I love that you brought that up, is pedestalizing people. When I put
Yes.
them up on a pedestal, and you know, there's an element. I say this to the men that I work with all the time: is you put them on that pedestal so that you could watch them fall. You realize that you put them up on this stage that nobody can actually live into, so that I could feel good about myself when I watched them fall off of that pedestal and prove to me that nobody is actually that good. And it's a very interesting dynamic that I see happening all the time in relationship, where I'm like, I go in and I'm like, this person's absolutely amazing. They do all of these things. And the person's going, I do? I didn't even know I did that. But I am projecting all of my hopes and aspirations into a human being. It's just a human being walking around. And then when I see any evidence that they're not that projection of who, as you said, I never even communicated my expectation for them to be, then that begins the core negative image. Oh, it's not just that they didn't live up to my expectation. They are the spitting image of the exact opposite of what it is that I'm looking for, right? And I think that that's a very detrimental place to begin relationship from. There's another part of your question you asked, and I don't think I answered.
I'm just so captivated listening to you. This is so good. So for most of the people listening on my platform, a lot of them have been in long-term relationships. They've been with partners for a long time. Most of my clients are really dedicated to their personal growth and well-being. And that means they change and grow over time, right? You've changed and grown. I'm sure you are probably, completely different as a partner as who you were in your first relationship. So when staying in a relationship and you're growing and your partner isn't necessarily growing, how do we do this? Because I like recently have gotten into the weeds a lot around me continuing to grow. My partner wasn't growing. Some big things happened. I wanted to be blind to everything that was going on. And eventually, the universe in its beautiful way comes with its 2x4 and like really, wake up, wake, it's time to wake up. But for years I had known that I was growing and he wasn't growing, but I wasn't prepared to leave for a whole variety of reasons. That could be a whole other podcast episode on its own. But what do you do when your partner really isn't growing and you're growing and you're starting to feel that bigger and bigger divide and you're trying to communicate differently and you're trying to show up differently and you're using all your self-development tools, where do you go from there? Because you do start to compile those negative stories about them.
It's an interesting conundrum. And this is something that I hear all the time in women's groups, men's groups, and I have this great passion for getting men's circles and women's circles to coexist at the same time, so that your partners are actually doing the same work, so that we can be like, oh, we're actually doing the work together. Because most oftentimes it doesn't look that way. It's like, I'm doing my work over here. You are or are not doing your work, for whatever it's worth. And I have these great big breakthroughs. And I come and I want to share this breakthrough with my partner, and they're not necessarily in the space to receive that. They're not able to connect with me on that level, and that can feel very isolating, to experience this new aspect and new versions of me, and not seeing that reflected in my most intimate relationships. I think that's one of the most difficult pieces, is that as we grow, how is my partner, my most intimate relationship, reflecting the version of me that I want to see or I don't want to see? And that's really what I'm hearing underneath that, to a certain degree, is I know what I'm doing, I know what's happening, but I'm not seeing that reflection. I'm not seeing them seeing me this way. They're seeing me as the old me, and they're working with me as the old me, which even highlights the absence of their growth, right?
Correct.
But at the core of it, it's not even it. The question would be, if they could see your growth and reflect back positively what you're experiencing, would it even bother you so much that they were not necessarily growing at the same time or in the same time frame that you were? Because I do think that relationships are seasons. We mentioned this earlier when we started. It's like, it's kind of like a double helix. I may be growing in this way and they're not growing in this season, but there might be a season where I'm slowing and they're growing. And if we're in long-term relationships, you know, there are going to be opportunities for many different relationships within that relationship. And so I think the biggest challenge is not so much whether or not that other person is growing, but can they accept and see and reflect back the version of me that I want to be, that I'm committed to, that I'm showing up as? Can they reflect that back in a way that feels really good? Because the last thing that I want is to not be seen, not be accepted, not be reflected by the person that is my most intimate connection.
Right. If we go back to what we were talking about with victim, right, and getting a benefit out of being a victim, I believe that when we come into relationships, right, whatever attracts us, we always get what we need in our relationships, whether it's healthy or not, right? We find that match. And then as we start to grow, if your partner can't reflect that growth back to you, because now they're not getting the same benefit that they used to get from the relationship before. For instance, I've got a client right now. She'll probably be listening to this. She'll appreciate your feedback. Who has really, for most of her life, learned how to be the martyr. By the martyr, right? Doing all the things for all the people, really looking for that love and acceptance. And her husband, to a certain degree, has benefited from her role as the martyr. And in our work together, she's really grown out of that and found her voice and is, you know, just showing up like a badass in her life right now. And it's destabilizing her relationship because now she's not the same person that she was before. So her husband's needs aren't being met in the way they were before. So they're kind of at this like prickly part. And she is in this place of like, do I stay? Do I go? Is he going to grow? Is he going to accept me as I am? You know, and finding herself having to really work at not being triggered back into that old pattern, try and meet his needs. So, what do you do in a situation like that when your partner really, you know, isn't happy with the fact that you now are different?
You know, there's multiple layers of that, and the thing that pops up to me immediately is, I mean, first, you know, from the compassionate context, well, actually, let me step back. First, from her perspective, I'm like celebrating her growth, and I want her
Right.
to go where she wants to go, and I want her to take no prisoners on the path to getting to the full expression of who she is, first and foremost. The other piece of it is that the dynamic that was our relate that has been our relationship is a co-creation,
Correct.
right? And so while I may be a different person than I was before, I also co-created the dynamic where I was the martyr and he had these expectations. And so now I've come and changed the game, right? I've come in and created a new set of understandings. And so in relationship, in good relationships, there's something I talk about the difference between masculine and feminine integrity. Bear with me for this for a second, right?
Love it.
Masculine integrity is a projection into the future. It's, I say I'm going to do this thing, and come hell or high water, I'm going to do that thing. Circumstances change, I'll still do that thing. That's what men mean when they say integrity, right? And so, but feminine integrity is, this is how I feel right now, and I'm being truthful with what I'm feeling in this moment, right? And tomorrow, I may feel a different way, and I'm going to be truthful with what I'm experiencing right now. Now, we get to learn from each other in this, right? There is some element of masculine integrity, which is projection in the future, like let's keep moving forward, right? But the place where men get in the weeds is they don't know how to renegotiate in good faith. And what I would say here is there's an opportunity to renegotiate in good faith, which is to acknowledge that, hey, listen, we had a dynamic. That this dynamic was built under these circumstances, under these understandings. And I understand that I fully participated in creating that dynamic, but this dynamic's not working for me anymore. Here's the thing that I need in order to move forward. And to make that as a request and not as a demand, I need you to change, right? I need you to be this, that, and the other, right? This is what This is what I am moving towards. And this is my request for you to meet me in this way, shape, or form. Now, once I can make that request, then I can start to engage with my partner around meeting me where I am. And if they can't meet me where I am, if that's, again, I can be here for as long as I'm able to be here without losing myself. But I can also, with compassion, give them the opportunity to step into this new reality, this new relationship that we want to have. And oftentimes with couples, I counsel them into like legitimately putting that old relationship to rest, to ceremonially killing off that relationship, putting it to an end, saying that's not serving either of us anymore. We get to mourn the losses of what that was so that we can create a new space to be in a new dynamic. Both of us coming to this new dynamic with what are the needs that we want to put into this space. And in that conversation, do we agree that we can meet those needs or that we're open to trying to meet those needs? And if not, then maybe we go our separate ways. But can I create the opportunity for my partner to meet me in that way?
A beautiful way to phrase it. And ultimately, it does come down to being okay if your partner can't meet you, what it looks like to potentially have to release their relationship with love, whatever it's going to be. And I know that men and women can do this, but hang on for far too long with the hopes that their partner is going to rise up. And I love that you're talking about that. Like, how long can I be there without losing myself completely in holding the potential for this person to change? And everything you said about really beginning again. I could feel myself getting emotional when you were talking about that, because in my own relationship right now, I'm very much in a burning down phase, and I haven't really gone into, what caused that. And it doesn't really matter. But my partner and I, we have a 12-year-old together. We've been together for like 15 years or so, and I've grown, he's grown, stuff has happened. We've gone our own separate ways now. So he's living independently of us, and we're taking the next 12 months to just really figure out what we both want and what we both need. More so me, he would love to be here. And I'm more so like, I need some space and time to figure out what's going to be right for me. And one of the things that has really become apparent for me is, in order for me to continue to be in this relationship in the future, if that is truly what I choose to do, is that our entire past history has to be like burnt to the ground. Like, it really will have to be, we're beginning again. So even though we have this past history, it's like making that conscious decision that we're no longer going to indulge in that, because now we are here and this is what our relationship looks like moving forward. And these are the new contracts that we have with each other. And this is how we're going to show up for each other. And, different non-negotiables and different, for me personally, like real lines in the sand around, wow. And it's not about him. It's about what I'm no longer willing to accept in myself, keeping out of my patterns of behavior, not trying to change him, right? This is more about managing my own parts and people that want to run the show, including, my 6-year-old, who just, she just loves love. She just wants to be loved, but she's not the best person to make decisions in an adult relationship. And that has been so humbling for me to see how often in my communication and in the choices I was making in my relationship, how it was coming from such a younger version of myself who was just so innocently trying to get her needs met, not even understanding that this isn't the healthy way to go about it. Which made me think about, something I said to one of my clients is, and I'd love to hear your definition of this, which is, how would you describe a healthy relationship? Because when I was looking at my own relationship, I came to realize that what I defined as a healthy relationship was based on my model of reality that was created through my lived experiences, my parents, other people's parents, right? But just because that was my model of reality doesn't actually make it true. So I had a really kind of like low bar. Not to throw shade on my parents, right? They love each other. They're great people. But in terms of what it really takes to have a healthy, safe, secure, loving, sovereign relationship that was never modeled to me. And man, that takes a lot more work than we're led to believe in. You know, you just go out, you get married, you have a baby, you have a mortgage, da, 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 and then, you know, you grow all together and you die. A conscious relationship and a healthy relationship, in my eyes, is so much more profound than what I ever believed it to be. So I would love to hear your definition of what is a healthy relationship and what people can look to measure or gauge where they're at compared to what, I don't know if you can, compared to like what would be like the ultimate relationship. Like, I really feel like you and Emily are growing towards this. I love it. I love
Thank
her. I
you.
know you've
Thank
both done
you.
a lot of work and you've been through stuff. So yeah, I would love for you to talk a little bit more about that. I know there was a lot in there.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'd just say a healthy relationship is a growth-oriented relationship, a relationship where we are in this as long as we are supporting each other to grow into the grow closer to our highest expression of who we are. To the degree, and I've really been looking at relationship after two divorces, right? I asked the question of, are either of those failed relationships because they didn't last? And, I would say, particularly my last marriage, I would say no, it was not failed at all. In fact, we grew tremendously. I grew tremendously. I think we both grew tremendously through that relationship. Now, she had a change in sexual orientation, and so that had a deviation in our relationship, but ultimately we continued to stay focused on becoming the best version of ourselves and supporting each other through that. But I wouldn't say that there is an absolute definition to what a healthy relationship is overall. But what I would say is a healthy relationship is one where we talk about what our version of a healthy relationship is. That is really the key piece. It's not about what it looks like for anybody else. It's about what does it look like for you and I in this season of our lives to create a healthy relationship? Can we come together and create a shared model of what it is that we want to create and talk about it? And ultimately, I think that that's the most healthiest approach to relationship that I can take, is where I'm having these regular conversations about what do I need? What do you need? How can our needs be met in this relationship? And where do our needs need to be met in other places? And how can I love you so much that all I want is for your needs to be met? I think about my children. I don't care if somebody else meets their needs. I just care that their needs are met. And that's what it means for me to love them unconditionally. So how can we put them on the table, say, this is what I'm needing, and what part of this do you want to pick up? What part of this are you happy for me to pick this up elsewhere? How do all of these needs get met? And that at the end of the day, a healthy relationship is one where all needs get met.
You know, it comes back to communication, because I think that many people listening make the assumption that they know what their partner's needs are. And they make the assumption that their partner knows what they need. And I don't know if you find this with your clients, but when I ask my clients, what do you need? What do you want? A lot of the times they're like, huh, nobody's ever asked me that question. I've never asked myself that question. So how can we possibly have expectations that our partner, it, can meet our needs when we don't know what our needs are and when we're not communicating them? And if we've been with that person for many years, my needs at 50 are different than when I was in my 30s or my 20s in terms of what I wanted from my partner. So how does one start these conversations with their partner? Because I didn't learn this in school, right? We're not educated on the things that actually matter in life. Ellie, you know that. But, you know, trigonometry, that's coming handy. So how do you start these conversations with your partner if you've never had them before? Because I don't think most of us really know how to even initiate these conversations. And going back to what you said around vulnerability, I mean, that's a dirty word with a lot of my clients, right? Vulnerability is about weakness, They don't like how it makes them feel. And for many of my women clients, they are very locked in kind of that masculine take the role energy, which is also so detrimental in their relationships. So how do you start?
How do I start the difficult conversations? The simple answer is there's a phrase I use oftentimes, which is connect before I correct. If I'm wanting to have a difficult conversation, I used to teach filmmaking. And one of the hardest things to do is give a filmmaker notes. And so we always go into the note session and go, okay, what did you like about the film first? Let's start there. What did you like about the film? Okay. Now that we've built a little bit of trust, we can start to have the conversations. And so the first piece is if I'm having this conversation, I'm not starting with, I really don't like how you're not showing up for me, because ultimately, again, what's going to happen there is immediately the guard's going to come up. Oh, I've done something wrong. My shame is now kicking in. And I'm going to need to fight back and protect myself from this version of me that is so detrimental to my sense of self. I'll give you a quick example of this. Between Emily and I, recently, I noticed how upset I got when her actions would reflect back that I was being a bully, that I was, that I was overbearing or I was running the conversation. And it got me really heated because I always hated the bully. I just I abhorred the bully. I'd fight against the bully. I was the bully defeater. But what reflected back on me was that in beating up the bully, I had taken on some of the qualities of the bully and I didn't even know it. And so just her reflection of her being timid around a response was like, I'm not the bully. Why are you being timid around my response? So I immediately went on the offensive. And so it's how I establish that conversation is by starting with, what's working here? Here are the pieces that are working. Here are the pieces that I'm really grateful for. These are the things that I see in you that really move me, that really bring me a sense of connection and feeling like I really want to be in this relationship with you. Okay. Maybe they want to share some too. And from that space, I can say, okay, well, here are some things that would really support me in getting my needs met. This is a feeling that I'm experiencing, owning what this is for me, and the more I can connect the dots on what it is for me, the less I'm finding myself in the victimhood, right? So if I can say, yeah, you yelled at me and that's not okay. But if I can go even further and say, you know what? I've experienced other people yelling at me. I've experienced a father who was, a little bit too. And so when that happens, my little girl shows up. And, it's not necessarily because of what you're doing, but this is who I am. This is me. This is me responding to that kind of behavior. And I'm not saying you're bad or wrong, but I'm saying this is what comes up in me. Can you help me? Like, that's the vulnerable piece. Can you help me? Can you help me to regulate in that moment? Can you see that coming through for me and show up in a way that's more supportive? What I'm really saying is the way to have the conversation is to find a pathway to allowing your partner to win. It blows my mind how often I see clients and how much experience this, where, I have this notion that if they fight through all of my bullshit, then that means that they really love me.
Right.
Like if they're willing to put up with all of my shit, then they really love me. The other one that comes up, you mentioned this early, that I experience this with men all the time, which is I don't need to tell you what I want. If you loved me, you would give me what I want. I give you what you want all the time. So why can't you treat me the same way and give me what I want without me ever asking? Now, there's two big fallacies in there.
Yeah.
One, am I actually giving you what you want, or am I just guessing and presupposing what that may be? And I'm not even hitting the mark. I'm way off the mark, right? So there's both a judgment that I'm hitting it where I might not be, and I'm way off the mark. And this prevents me from ever having to do the vulnerable thing, which is to ask you to help me. Instead, I get to be the victim and say, well, you need to do this because you've been doing this, this, and this.
Yeah, it's there's so many assumptions we make. You know, I've had clients say to me, like, what do you mean I should just tell my husband that I'd love for him to buy me flowers? I'm like, just tell him you'll get what you want. He's going to be happy because now he knows exactly how to meet your needs. Well, it doesn't mean as much if I tell him. I said, but who told you that story? Like, you get to make it mean whatever you want. If I tell my partner that I would love this thing and he goes out and does it for me, I don't feel less loved because I didn't have to tell him, like, or that because I told him, I don't feel less loved. In fact, I feel more like he heard what I said. He went out, he did the thing. That makes me feel like, wow, he's really listening to me, and it makes me want to listen more to him. And I think to your point, it's how can you approach these conversations in a way that doesn't suddenly bring up that shield and about you owning how you're really feeling. Like, that's been a really powerful thing in my own relationship, to not caretake how he might be feeling or how me saying this thing might make him feel, but really just owning it for me. So not saying like, you make me feel like this when you do this, but when you do this, this is how it feels for me in my body. This is the story I'm telling myself. Is that true? And it never is, but it's amazing how, you know, that's what comes up. My partner is more of a minimalist. I like my things. When he comes over, he's helping, so he'll start picking up, putting away stuff. And I'm immediately like, the story I'm telling myself right now is that you think that I'm keeping a very messy house. He's like, that's not it at all. I'm just trying to support you because I know how much harder it is for you to be here on your own versus us working together. Fair, right? But do you see how I could have spun that into such a negative story if I didn't just ask? And that was coming from my own insecurities about being judged when I was young for messy rooms and all that kind of stuff. So, communicating in a way that really allows your partner to hear what you're saying and allows you to be responsible for what you're saying.
And it's also, to go a level deeper, it's really, have I gotten to the bedrock of what I'm really wanting? So when I hear that, like this one comes up, I think a lot of times, I wanted him to give, I want him to give me flowers, but the flowers is really just a strategy. And what it is that I really want is I want to know that he's thinking about me.
Yes.
Right. And so, it doesn't work for me if he just gives me the flowers because I told him, because that doesn't show me that he's thinking of me, right? So it's getting even deeper into what I really want to know is that you think of me throughout the day, right? So how can I give him a pathway? Now I've given him a pathway. All he needs to know is, I can text you. I can show up with flowers. Whatever I do, whenever I'm thinking of you, I can let you know that that means something to you. It doesn't mean anything to me. I think of you. Don't think you need to hear that. But oh, now I know. Now I know what you're really seeking, And it's like, again, the strategy that I've received that in the past is when somebody gave me flowers, I knew that they were thinking of me.
Yes.
Right. And so I go back to the flowers, but if it's not delivered in just the right way, they're going to fail,
Right. It truly is going deeper and really, and this is where this work is work. Because you have to, in order to be in a great relationship with your partner and do it together, you have to be willing to do the work on yourself. So, you know, I believe for many couples, they need to work independently and then they need to come onto the court together. Otherwise, things can go a little bit awry if you're trying to work out issues you're having within your partnership, but you're not at the place yet where you're even willing to look at what's going on for you. That can make it challenging as well, because again, you're back in the victim and wanting them to change, because then everything would be perfect.
You know, I agree with you wholeheartedly and have for a very long time. And recently I've been seeing something that is really beautiful, which is when you do that deep work with the partner in the room, when I allow them when we go and mine in what's going on, what's underneath that, having their partner witness that journey creates deep compassion. It really creates a connection where we can say, oh, that's about, oh my God, that's about, you know, how your father treated you. As your partner, I want to love you through that. Like now that I can see you working through it and going to like the bedrock of what's really coming up for you, holy shit. I didn't realize that, you know, that garbage can not going out stood, you know, when I reflected that garbage can didn't go out. Now you think that I think you're the shitty friend that you had growing up that never took care of anything. And that's who you're reflecting back for me, right? So when we can do that in partnership and have a support to help us see what's at the bedrock and let my partner see that in exchange, it actually can create a great place for that connection to deepen.
And I think that that's important what you're saying, and have it facilitated by someone like you and Emily, because I know this is the work that you guys are doing together now. Because, you know, as we mentioned, most people really struggle with vulnerability. But when you don't have to carry the whole session, right, or the conversation, yeah, you have somebody facilitating it for you who can manage the emotions that are coming up for both parties and keep them in the room. And support the integration of what's coming up. I think that that is really, really key. There's a big difference between reading like self-help books, yeah, right? And being, yeah, in the presence of really powerful coaches and facilitators who can walk you into this deep vulnerability. And it's surprising how so many of us don't feel safe with the person we're most intimate with. And
absolutely,
how have we allowed that to be okay? Because if you can't be safe and open and vulnerable with that person, are they the right person for you? And how do we create deeper levels of safety? You know, because safety can be defined in so many different ways. And even within my relationship, I've always been safe in my relationship, but I can now see that there was this disconnect. And there was a part of me that never fully felt emotionally safe. And same for him, right? He's got his own things. He's got his own things as well. But how we can create that feeling of safetiness, which then opens up the channel for even more vulnerability with each other.
Yeah, it's very difficult to be vulnerable when I don't feel safe. And when I'm in those ruts, you know, yeah, I can read all the books, and that'll bring me to an awareness. But awareness does not generally lead directly to change. In fact, I'll say for me, that was been one of my biggest, the things that's held me back from my own growth was I read all the books, I have all the information, I know it, so I'm doing it, right? You know, but I'm not. And so, yeah, it is really, you know, going back to what we said, we weren't taught these things in school.
No.
You know, and then we get into relationship and we're like, well, why can't I should be able to do this by myself. I read a book, you know? And so these are really challenging tools to really learn how to work with. But once I learn how to work with, they're going to last me for the rest of my life. Going back to it, relationship is the playground. It's the area where I get to experience how I relate to all of life. You know, I look at relationship really as the greatest pathway to interdependence. You know, we grow up as small children. We have this need to be, first of all, independent. You know, how can I be of my own? And then as I move into adulthood, I most often move into adulthood through codependency. That's what we're actually taught in our society. And so then I have to rewrite that notion of what relationship is away from codependency and into a model of interdependency, which is we all rely on somebody. None of us are here solely on our own. We are relying on ultimately all of us. And so if I can really practice what it looks like to find interdependence within my most intimate relationships, that opens up the gateway to interdependence with all of life. And I really do believe that that is what we're here for, is to realize that we are not separate, but we are all part of this great one fabric. And that's what we are moving towards. And relationship gives me the space to play and to learn what that looks like. And there should be no shame in getting some support to play in this playground in ways that I wasn't taught as a child.
I agree. How much harder, I'm going to ask you this question, how much harder is this work for men to step into? Because in a world where I look around and I'm like, wow, everybody's a coach, everybody and their dog is a coach these days, and it's really marketed towards women, I'm seeing more men in the field, but I don't, when it comes to men and vulnerability, that seems to be a whole other can of worms, right? Like I've heard women want our men to be vulnerable, but then at the same time, it's like, don't be vulnerable. I need you to be strong so that I can. So talk to me a little bit about the perspective for men and how as women, we can welcome our men into this work and encourage it without, caretaking them and codependently nudging them along. But how can we make this a safe space for men so that our men can grow alongside all the growth that women are having these days?
I mean, the first word that comes to me is compassion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is learning to accept that we're all products of our environment. We're all doing the very best that we can with what we have. It's a prayer that I do for my father almost every day. I know that you're doing the very best that you can with what you have. And to meet them where they are, rather than where you want them to be. And it gets back to that, you know, that connect before I correct. If I want more men to be into this in this space, I have to find a way to meet them in their humanity rather than to meet them at the level of expectation of what I want them to be. We all want to be that. And we're all, both men and women, we are victims, quote unquote, of the stories of who we are supposed to be in this world. What roles we're supposed to fulfill and how we're supposed to show up in this world. And we're all in recovery, as adults. We're all in recovery from all of those notions of who I was supposed to be, coming into grips with who I am. And I would say that more often than not, there aren't as many spaces where men are being introduced to this work currently, as there are, that in my judgment, that there are for women. And so I have to take that, you know, with where it is and say, okay, you're willing to step forward. How can I meet you where you are rather than expecting you to be somewhere else and walk this road hand in hand with you, to support you to getting the support that you need. And at the end of the day, I do feel very strongly that men need men to heal, and that getting involved in groups with other men is the greatest path to, I'd say it's the best way to open that door to the possibility for who I really want to be, because we carry a lot of shame as men. I know women carry a lot of shame as well, but we carry it a little bit differently because we were told that we have to carry it by ourselves. And so, you know, the lone wolf, the man out there doing his very best by himself, he really needs community. He really needs someone that he can stay, that he can be connected with, that he can be vulnerable with in a safe space so that he can understand the value of that and then be able to bring it home. But it's hard. It's very difficult to bring it home because, as you said before, there is an expectation that I'm going to be a provider, that I'm going to be the rock, that I'm going to be the one that holds, that creates either physical or emotional, or financial stability, whatever that may be. There's an expectation that society holds on me. And I do believe in my core as a man that if I can't hold those things, I will be discarded, I will be abandoned, and I will be left. So my antidote is find a group of men that I can experience and express all of those parts of myself with, see myself still alive, still here. And then from that practice space, I can begin to bring that more of that version of me back to my relationships, back to my most, the people that I care about the most.
Well, and that's, that's why I wanted to bring you on to the podcast and have this conversation because, I wanted more eyeballs on your work and the work you're doing with men to open up that space because, I had a really interesting experience during COVID because my partner wasn't working and I was. My business was really taking off at the time, and we completely switched roles. And I stood in the role of being like the sole provider and the responsibility that came with that. And I was like, wow, this is not fun. No wonder women don't want to do this. Like, this is just not, it sounds all cool and exciting, but it really gave me that this is what it feels like to be a man, to hold all that responsibility of being the provider financially, of holding everything together. I can often get into my masculine energy too much. We're still working on it, but it really was like, this is what it's like on the other side. And I can understand now why men struggle with different things from women. And I can also see why women stay where they are and don't fully step into that next level for themselves because it is a lot more responsibility to hold. And it's not everybody. I'm being very like stereotypical here. But I think that as more as women do their work and men do their work, and we can come together and see that we are each in each other, that we're going to be able to communicate and we're going to be able to grow as a society in a much different way than we have been. So I would love for you to tell everybody about the work that you're doing solo and with Emily. I would love for you to share a little bit about your story with Emily and how you guys have found your way to each other, because you've both been through a lot. For anybody who's listened to the podcast, Emily's been on, she's talked about her previous relationship and the massive fallout of that. You've obviously had two divorces, and you guys have now found your way together and are now creating this business together and this life together, and it's so beautiful. And I kept telling her, like, just your person is there. I will hold space for your person to be there. If you're not ready to, I will hold the space for that. And sure enough, you showed up. And it's really, really beautiful. So I would love for you to talk about how you guys are cultivating this relationship moving forward and how you're supporting others and doing the same.
Sometimes I feel like I'm a rock star being Emily's partner. She's
Right?
so amazing, right? And whenever
She
someone, I'm
really
like,
is.
and I shared this with you when I was listening to the podcast where you interviewed her and I was, listening to her talking about me. I'm like, I feel like I'm a rock star. Like I feel more alive, more in a celebration of who I am as a reflection, as she reflects back on me. And I'd say like that in itself is just,
She sees you, right? She sees all of you, and it's really beautiful. And she's not seeing your potential. She's seeing who you are today, accepting you as all of you. And she also holds space for what you are also going to become without expectations on that. And that's really, really a beautiful thing.
I'd like to think that I do my very best to do the same. I'm deeply in love with this human being. She is really a rock star in my life. I have, when we first met, it's obvious she's brilliant. It's really, and it's one of those things where, I thought, man, she's really smart. She's like, man, he's really smart. And we were both like, I don't know if I'm smart enough for this person. I don't know if I'm smart enough for this person. She's really nice. He's really not. I don't know if I'm nice enough for this person. We kept experiencing these things where it's like the reflections of who, like seeing the other person as who we desire to be, and seeing each other in those through that lens has been a beautiful place to begin our relationship. Emily and I had, Nothing short of magic, I would say. I don't say that every relationship, and I don't know that I've ever experienced this. It was very early in our relationship where we were literally just facing each other and this overwhelming sense of connection. Like we both felt it and literally crying. We're like, what in the world is going on? I've never felt this way before. And from that seed, we've been really intentional to really lean into doing the work. To creating the space to practice, to talk. We've processed a whole lot in, less than a year that we've been together. But we also process very quickly and very easily. And it's such a joy to be in that space where I can talk about what's alive and she can talk about what's alive for her, and we move through it. At the core of it, I don't know that I've ever experienced this in my life. I've always wanted this, to be able to say I've got someone who's a ride or die. That this person is in it to win it, and they are going to work with me hand in hand. They're willing to believe that I can get there, that I will work my hardest to get there, and I believe the same thing about her. That really lights me up each and every day. And I'm old enough to not be naive and believe that it's always going to be that way, and know that there are going to be challenges and trials and tribulations. But at the end of the day, as I was saying back earlier, the me that she reflects back is the me that I want to be, and more often than not. And I hope that she can say the same thing for me. The way that I see her is the way that she wants to see herself. And as long as we continue to keep growing and reflecting that image back, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Love it so much. Love it so much. I love it so much for you guys. So now, how have you come together and how are you serving couples in this other powerful way? How can people find you? How can they work with you? Like, tell us all the good stuff here.
Awesome. Thank you so much again. And so you can find me on Instagram. I am Kelly Gardner. That's the easiest way to connect with me. Send me a DM, drop me a note in there. Individually, I work with men one-on-one, but primarily I like working with men in groups, because it's through the groups of men that you get to the best image of who you are and how you're showing up in all of your relationships. And I'm continuously running men's groups and have been for many years. And again, as I mentioned, the work that's really lighting me up is the work that Emily and I are doing together, which is what I call two-on-two coaching. That's the word I'm looking for. Two-on-two coaching. So you get both of us in the same room at the same time. And that has really lit me up lately. One, because I see so many men reticent to do couples therapy. The general rule of thumb for men, and I've heard this from lots of men, is that when you go to couples therapy, you're going towards divorce.
Right. And you're going to be ganged up on.
Yeah, exactly. And there's going to be a woman in the room with your woman who's going to gang up on you and tell
Correct.
you why you're all your, that's a side note. My ex-wife is a therapist, and I feel for the guys that end up in her room. I don't know. I don't think she has the same compassion and love. And that's real. People really do experience being ganged up on. And so it's such an honor for me to be able to, generally, women are the ones that initiate it. Women are the ones that are saying, hey, and oftentimes in relationship, things have been bad for a while. And the guy's going around, yeah, everything's all right. It's not too bad. And the woman's been sitting here going for like, a year, and like, I don't know how much longer I can take this. And they're the ones that oftentimes are the one they initiate the therapy, the counseling, whatever it may be. And then the man experiences himself being dragged along, and I'm going to be ganged up on. And to be able to create a space where, hey, we're going into this and I've got your back along this journey. I'm also going to call you forward. I'm not going to be, I'm not just going to let your shit stink up this room. I'm going to tell you where your shit stinks, but I'm also going to do it in a loving way that respects who you are as a man and doesn't diminish you in this room, but instead builds you up. So having the opportunity to do that work, particularly, the space that we are really, really loving this, and what really lights me up in terms of the work that I want to do in the world, is supporting young couples in this to build a healthy foundation, to get a fresh start. when I, however many relationships I've been in, can I start this new relationship off in the best possible way? And short of that, can we end the relationship and can we start a new relationship in the best possible way? But creating the foundation for fresh starts, that's really what I'm in love with. And so, yeah, you can reach out to myself or Emily, either way, and connect with us around that work. We'll be doing an in-person workshop in Asheville this summer, dates to come. Continuing to just be in community and connect. If you're in the Asheville area, please let me know. I'm building and growing community for this area as well.
Amazing. I love your work. Maybe I'll be there in the summer. I'm traveling all around the world. But
Please come visit.
I really love what you said about leading with compassion. That's something that I do in my coaching practice as well. We need more of it for people to know that they can be seen and heard and that we will call them forward, right? We're not there to be their best friends. And we can do it in a compassionate and loving way so that they feel safe and supported. It's just so powerful. And I would, I think back on, I still think my other relationship would have ultimately failed because I wasn't in it for the right reasons. I was blessed by God, the universe, that I did end up with a very solid man to have my children with. But I think about my kids who are getting to that age and they're both in serious relationships, how this type of work to do it when they're starting out to lay that foundation of what does this even look like? To get it in the hands of like late 20, early 30-year-olds. So it's like, this is how we're going to grow our relationship because, hey, it might be sunshine and roses right now, but you throw a couple kids in the mix and a mortgage payment and jobs and parents and all that stuff. And pretty soon it is not the white picket fence life that you were sold by Disney that it was going to be. And this, I feel like, is the missing link. And when I know about how many people get divorced, when I watch the statistics about suicide, specifically with men, when I hear about the percentage of people having affairs outside of their marriages, right? There's something not right going on in relationships. And we keep like pretending like it's not happening. And we're all in this living this pretend world. And I know for me, coming back to that question around what makes a healthy relationship, I need my relationship to be true and honest and real, right? Authentic. And I feel like so many people are just going through the motions of what it means to have a relationship instead of having a truly connected, committed, authentic relationship. But how could we? When none of us were ever taught this stuff, and we're left to flounder about until, we have our come to Jesus moment sometime in our late 30s, early 40s, 50s. I've had a couple come to Jesus moments. They come about every decade. I'm hoping I'm done now. I feel like I'm like, this has got to be the final one. I can't take anymore. No, you're laughing. Oh, so I'm so excited about the work you're both doing. Both of you deserve nothing but success, happiness, fulfillment, joy, peace. You're here and she's in your life because you've both done the work to attract yourselves to each other, right? Like we don't get things in our life by accident. We create them. And the work you've both done has what's created this. And it's really beautiful for me to see as somebody who is like kind of at this begin again stage, whether it's with the same person, whether it's with someone new, I don't know. I'm living in that space, but it's really, really beautiful to see. So I'm so glad you came on the show. I'm so glad that you gave me all this time because I know we've gone, this is probably my longest podcast interview ever. For reals.
Well, thank you.
But you also have such a gem of a voice. I'm like, I'm just gonna sit here, listen to your voice. It's been really, really great, Kelly. I've really appreciated connecting with you and you sharing all your wisdom and perspective. It's lovely to get to know you.
Lisa, thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much for creating this space, for so vulnerably sharing with your audience what you're going through so that they can learn from it and committing to your own growth and sharing that with other people. It's just such an honor to be here with you.
Do my best, like everybody else.
Yes, we
You know,
are.
this is what I was put on the planet for. So promise me you'll come back on again. Maybe I can have you and Emily on at the same time. That would be
Love it.
fantastic. So I will put all of your information in the show notes. And yeah, I just appreciate you so much for being here again, Kelly. It's been a real pleasure hosting you.
Such an honor. Thank you.